Yeah, I'm going to start with my settling poem. It's called Ultrasound. Deep in the pockets of my memory are coins rubbed smooth from fingers. Sorry, not settled. Start again. Ultrasound.
It's VH, yeah.
My memory. Deep in the pockets of my memory are coins rubbed smooth from fingering. Stories I have hoarded, guarded from the corruption of sharing. The night we spent in the one-room house in Cabilia, after broad beans and buttermilk from a single dish, you in the big bed with him, the honour, me with his wife on the floor, how in the night she put her arms around me, and from behind the fortress of her belly, her child tapped messages on my back. Sorry, usually that is my settling poem. That was from a time... I lived in briefly in Algeria. Stanley Kunitz has said that memory is each man's poet in residence. And if you just surgically remove the sexist language, he has a point that memory is like a poet in residence, and that's where that poem came from. But I think another poet in residence we all have, or a lot of us have, is one of question of home, of identity, of who we are, where we're from. It's not for nothing my collection is called World Without Maps. So the next poem I'd like to read is called Left Luggage, and it's sort of self-explanatory. Is this mic okay? This morning I woke with seawater in my mouth. My eyes felt rinsed like after crying. My veins were scoured. My limbs wrung out. I was beached on a fog-bound bed, adrift, missing the aquatic. Nothing is lost, just out of reach. Everything that ever was is somewhere. If only we can get there, find the key, remember the encrypted pin, be brave enough to jump, know how to swim. If only our feet had not been bound at birth, our wings trimmed back like wicks to suit our mothers, or cobbled to a gooey mess by fathers, confusing the discreet powers of sun and sun, deluded and controlling. As long as no one changed the locks along the way and didn't tell us, or dropped the keys, or worse still, built a breeze-blocked wall, a suicide bunker, performing harakiri on our dreams, left bag and baggage rotting on the floor. This morning I was reminded by a taste of salt that we do not waste those supine hours spent sprawled, unconscious in an oarless bed, that we are all at sea, our time well spent diving back and back to unpicked locks, find home. my memory now, is it Stephen? Yes. said, I was born in Dublin, but I now live in Mayo. But I lived for a long time in 2 years in Algeria, but most of the time in Spain. And my two children, one lives in Barcelona and the other lives in Perpignan, South Coast. So I think what happens when you live in many different places, you leave a little bit of your yourself in around the world. So just going on, two poems about the whole thing about, I suppose, where home is. Actually, I was thinking today that the issue of home, it's so many different things, you know, and perhaps it's something that we imagine other people to have. You know, we're looking for home as if it existed, and always we look at other people and imagine they have a sense of home that we would like to have. And in fact, home doesn't have to be one thing. It can be poetry, it can be, your friends, different countries. Anyway, enough of that. This poem is called Bifocal. Damp air moistens my cheeks, rests lightly on my hair. Boots sink into evening sand, oyster catchers scatter. Through the acacia leaves, the square below pants in the midday lull. Iron curtains clatter shut. A homeless man unpeels a nest of plastic bags, catches a book, A child skateboards diagonally into shadow. Grey-green fence on Weavera, soft and anchored. Ribbon road unfurling. Hillsides hemorrhage into absence and longing. Gulls over the ramparts, spectres in the night. Let's try just to bring two of my worlds together. So, the next one is the same sort of theme. The place in the south of France, near Perpignan, where I go quite a lot, and where there's a small village, and the chapel rings, the bell rings on the hour of the hour. But then after a few minutes, it repeats it, so you get this double marking of the hour. And so that's really what gave rise to this poem, which I call Toll. The village chapel strikes the hour, minutes later strikes the hour again, six short beats like stick on iron, or 12, or 2, you wait, and then they come again, those tinny notes. That morning between 8 and 8, I travelled back across a restless night, remembering how the screech owls called as sleep refused to come, how I'd heard 12 and 12, both ones, but neither twos. Still poised between the eights, my mind tracked forward to the day ahead, the return journey, the long path from one home to the other, thinking that with time you can get used to anything, that being half in one place, half the other, you are caught inside a clock that strikes the hour twice. I brought back from a trip, but I've lived in different places, because I have children right now, I didn't do kind of big travels, but I have, was in South Africa, and on a trip, and I brought home these gorgeous, I don't know if you know the Zulu beer pots, beautiful round pottery vessels, which held, or used for the keeping or drinking beer. Anyway, I have a poem somewhere behind it called Blue Beer Pot. It's quite short. Blue Beer Pot. I hold the comfort of your roundness in my hand, cool heft of promise, pregnant curves. I could be warming wine, nursing beer, or some concoction brewed from nettle, luggage, lime, the charm to bring on motherhood. I listen with my fingers for new life, small stirrings in your belly's depth, a child's curled form, my palms fine-tuned to pick up its first kick. The other thing that became almost an obsession in on the south, near Cape Town, in South Africa. It was the time when the whales come up from the Antarctic. And you just stare and stare and stare at the sea, because you want the whales to reach, you want to see them. Because half the time nothing happens. So anyway, it's called whale watching. And I sort of made it into the shape of the whale. So I just thought while I was in South Africa, I'd read this one. Whale watching. The lavender sea is giving nothing away. We stand above the railway track, longing for those dark shapes, somewhere, down there, out of bounds, dark coupling, lumbering, loop into loop. Slow wheels, heavy with future, ready to slew the time come, fine spittle into our emptiness. And then, triumphantly, the two fingers, a flippant send-up, held, then gone.
I was just thinking when I, you know, when you do a reading, you sort of try and explain whether, you know, why the poems or where they came from. And I was remember reading somewhere that Schumann, when he was asked what a piece of music meant, he played it again. I like that. Anyway, back home. Yeah, this was kind of written before the bust, while the boom was still going on, and I live about half an hour west of Westport in Cantileo, and there had been just awful two suicides in the boys' secondary school. It's very, very close together, and it just, well, you can imagine how it affected everyone. Anyway, this book that I just mentioned, that was where this came from. And shortly after, I saw an article in the paper about research in the States where scientists were reported to have created a blackness that was blacker than anything that had been, any black that existed. So I thought the headline from the Washington Post, scientists create a black that erases virtually all the light. And that was February 2008. So it was kind of at the peak of the boom, but before the dust. So black and white. We've broken God's monopoly on the ineffable, on blinding light, on a world without end, amen, and us safe in the terminal building waiting for Dad to collect us. They've taken the white and made it whiter, the light brighter, and our children have clicked through their trap door, are twirling out there in the blizzard, arms probing in hope of finding each other, or another, or something, snow blinded in a world without maps, amen. They've taken the black and made it blacker, ousted Satan, downgraded his gloom, hardly dark enough to see me, an elegant shade of grey. You'll find God in the gallery, gilt-framed, silver-bearded, with angels harping on in their radiant robes, and Christ nailed to a cross. Back in the real world, we are all stumbling, lured on through the whiteout toward visions of perfection, fairy tales made from dreams dreamt by bankers, dizzied by wilderness, heading for chasms where the trap will fall open, and we will be left hanging. this is there's no explanation. This poem just came from an image, really. There was something else I want to read first. Sorry. I'm reading this because I have a friend in Dublin who was due to go to the James Hospital this morning for an operation, and I was about in Ottomans and I got a text from her to say, no bed, maybe Wednesday. So I thought, and on the radio earlier I had heard that James Hospital in Dublin is actually the best, has the fewest people on trolleys of all hospitals in Ireland. But anyway, this poem I wrote, sitting, waiting, and my husband was having something done to him in James. Now, not as bad as a poem, you know, poetic license. He wasn't as ill as it, I have to say. But this poem literally came from me sitting for a long time in the corridor and just seeing what was around me. So ground floor corridor, St. James Hospital. I actually called it basement corridor for a long time until I realised it isn't a basement. But it felt like a basement. I mean, it just felt like I was in the bowels of the hospital waiting. So, ground floor hospital, St. James's Hospital. I'm sitting on a flip-up plastic seat, waiting. It's cornflower blue, the blue of balloons, the blue of hope. I wait. The door that holds you in is powder blue. Mist stretches and thins,
letting the morning through from snow-wrapped mountains, my nostrils sting. The floor is a beach, the sand-flecked tide edged polished mirage, a fresh sluice slab, a hall of mirrors twisting faces into grief. The trolley with the suction tubes to make you come alive again is red, fire brigade red, no nonsense red, blood red, just bled, not old or caked or brown or dead. A white cloth drapes across the trolley top, an altar sheet arranging its bones, cornering the shadows, angling for attention. Come and paint me, now. The exit doors are barred and midnight blue. Too blue to be trusted. I look back to the mountain sky, waiting, watching the snow fall.
So now the other one I was going to read. This poem I was saying came from an image that just wouldn't go away, and eventually this is what came out. It's called The Suitcase of Bees. She brought it with her everywhere, its silver dimpled surface effervescent with the whir of wings within. In public, she would spread her skirt's thick folds to mute the angry drone, paint a smile across her face, hope no one would notice. Once inside her own four walls, the vibrations grew so shrill, she held her head and hummed. The ambulance crew was gentle as they led her owl-eyed through the gates, bees still resting taffeta in her head. The case was silent, a ruse in sly collusion with the doctor, who swore she was an expert, knew all there was to know of stings and swarms, their stridency, how to outface the queen. They built a wooden beehive, surrounded it with lemon balm, sweet basil, mint. And now, except for Myers' tinnitus, she is calm.
Okay, I have three more, if that's all
right. Sure.
Yeah, I mean this one, it came from, I have a friend in France the artist who painted the picture on the cover, her husband does hyper-realist portraits, taken forever, and absolutely perfect, but sort of technique that they're masters, sort of thing. And at one stage, he just needs to break out of that, and he started painting landscapes. And this poem came from his landscapes, which had this slightly blurred effect, so you kind of felt they were these like incipient movement. So I called it Lull. If I could walk into a painting, it would be this one. Slip into silence and looking back, see your mouth moving. Let the glass fold me, the sun unpacks me pore by pore. In here, no breath, no movement over the greenwashed fields or the woods beyond. No sound but a soft kiss of sand falling through fingers, dry rustling of feathers. But the earth turns, air begins to dart and puff. Spring corn flattens, cell by cell, gravity bent, blades are sucked into movement, trees sway, leaning, longing the threatening storm. I was writing a poem, and I was all getting very gloomy about burying and burial and all. And I just thought, I wonder what the origin of the verb to bury is, and what the etymology is. So I looked it up, and it is
B-E-R-G-A-N, Bergen. I don't know how you pronounce it in Old English, but anyway, it's an Old English word, Bergen. And I must have looked up online because suddenly all these ads came up for undertakers in America. So I thought, wow, some chain of undertakers in the, I think the West Coast of the United States has been looking up the etymology of very. So this is how the poem turned out. I wanted to write about the dimming light, how bones shift and sigh, restless for warmth, the way leaves yearn, open their pores, then open them more, about bones lying like leeks in green shrouds, gasping, and the sun weighed down by a pile of overcoats thrown in a sack at the back of the hill. About the polyanthus and cowslip that flowered in November outside my back door, how lonely they looked, wrongly dressed for the season, attracting the slimy pieces of slugs. About blood running grey, and mould webbing human feet. About how we bury bodies, how down to earth it is. Until I discovered the origins of our word for putting someone in the ground, and that a string of US undertakers had found the word as well and liked it, and used it as their trade name, and that made me smile.
Yeah, so you never know where things are going to come
from. Anyway, thank you very much indeed for inviting me here. I'm going to read one last my goodbye poem. I think it's amazing the setup you have here. I'm very envious. It's just fantastic and very welcoming. Also enjoy and I love being involved. And especially as I was saying, they've brought me on board a bit nearer together because it's now they're roads, but then you don't have to spend about 8 hours. This is called Prayer to a Night Train Driver. And it's just a nice lullaby, I suppose. We have placed our lives in your hands, We have placed our lives in your hands, invisible ones. Alone in your hallowed lair, lead us safely in tonight's dark maze along threads of steel to its core. May sleepers lull us into childish slumber, the tracks keep track of each and every dream. Through silent suburbs glide us, past drowsy cows and sheep, heavy coated under star-bent boughs. O perfect stranger, in you we place our trust. Spool in the raveled fabric of our cares, and clickety-clack, clickety-clack, knit us whole into another dawn.
Thank you very much.